This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Let's check with Dr. Paige McNulty to find out the latest on how the Gary Community School Corporation is doing these days. Dr. McNulty is the manager of the school district in Gary, and it's been a very, very busy start of the school year, to be sure. And Dr. McNulty, thank you for spending time with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, first, now that we have some decent weather, I suppose we should make acknowledgement of the fact that it was a very, very hot start to the school year, and we're talking not so much about activities in the schools, but about the weather itself. Will you fill us in on some of the issues that you all had faced as the new academic year got started and how things are doing now?
Sure. So we've been busy, as all school districts, I think, have, in ordering stuff for our schools so that we can make improvements, especially here in Gary. And so with that, we started ordering things back in March. Some of that was the roofing supplies, which is well underway, the track, the football, and also the air conditioning units. And those units, as people know, if they're doing contracting, are delayed. And so the air conditioning parts have been delivered and being installed. I think they're done actually now, and just tweaking the electrical pieces of them, but they weren't ready for the beginning of the school year, unfortunately. With COVID, everybody's trying to get parts and contractors, so the way it is.
Which of the buildings had the most problems here as the weather got really, really warm here in the last couple weeks?
Gary Middle School and Bailey. And those schools notoriously have not had air for many years anyhow, so this was nothing new as far as not having air, but we're excited to be able to have central air in all those buildings by next week.
Were those like the only buildings that didn't have some sort of air conditioning system in them?
Correct.
When you have to go to wait for some parts like that, obviously that you're having to wait for the contractor to get the parts so they can put them in to get work done here too.
Uh-huh.
What kind of stopgap measures, I hate to call it that, but they might be, that you have to have in the classroom so that you can still hold class in the building if you can?
Yeah, we were holding class in the buildings on some days that we were able to. Some days we were able to dismiss by noon so that it wasn't too hot in the afternoons. And then some of the days it was just simply too hot. And so we had the students home doing e-learning, virtual learning.
Did you find that in having to deal with all of these the weather problems that kind of got in the way and maybe created some other problems along the way, a lot of upset parents probably were concerned not only about the very warm classrooms, but maybe also worried about transportation? Did you have problems to get the school year started and in having bus service or make sure the bus service was there?
Yeah, we absolutely had problems with transportation. As you probably have seen the headlines, as many, many schools are having difficulties with transportation, unfortunately. So we're looking for bus drivers. We're looking for bus aides. It is a national shortage, and we were informed on Friday, the day before we started school the next week, by our bus service. We outsource our bus services to Illinois Central, that they were short bus drivers. 14 well. Bus drivers, but we weren't told that until literally the 12th hour. And so that was obviously concerning, and then we had to message that out to our parents. But fortunately, we've had a very strong outpouring of support from our community and community members who are trying to help us, meaning like we had the pastors who came and worked with us, and so we have about 10 to 12 pastors who are that we contracted with, and they're helping drive students to and from school. The city was also wonderful in meeting with us, and they have allowed four of the city buses to start picking up the high school students, so those students can get back and forth as well. But we understand that Illinois Central has been able to obtain at least five more bus drivers that will be ready by this Friday, so we should be fully staffed here within the next week as well.
One of the other things that you have to deal with, not only with the hot weather and the fact that we have a national bus situation here that seems to hit home in Gary, Indiana, of all places, you have also to deal with wanting to get some of the other projects started. And this goes back, I guess, in a way to how the referendum vote turned out earlier this year. You have a multifaceted program that's underway. You mentioned at the outset of our conversation about some of the things that you had planned early on to be able to use some of the referendum money for. What else is coming up that you're able to put advantage on some of the funds that the taxpayers of Gary have agreed to pay?
Yeah, so we are working on finishing the roofing at many of the schools. We also have the RFP out for the tennis courts, so the tennis courts will be completely rehabbed and fixed at the high school. The track was finished at the high school. The new turf is underway at the high school as well, putting on a new football turf. We have new curriculum. We already adopted a new reading curriculum, K through 12, for our district. And then we have a group of teachers and administrators that are working right now on looking at a new math curriculum for next year. So they're looking at different vendors and going to be piloting some potential new curriculum for that. So we are making some huge investments within the district, K through 12, so that students can have, you know, all the tools that they need, as well as our teachers.
I know there have been some concerns about some of the schools, and one in particular, which has made the news lately, is the Westside Leadership Academy. Some of the issues I know that came up are probably as related as they are in other buildings because of the weather. The buildings are too hot. Maybe they're not air-conditioned or not air-conditioned enough. And there have been some concerns, and parents have come out in recent weeks to complain about it. Will you fill us in on some of the concerns that have come up at Westside Leadership Academy and how they're being resolved?
Westside High School has air conditioning, so I'm not sure. Maybe that's a different building you were referring to, the middle schools, but the Westside has air conditioning, so that's not been a concern. The roof is nearly complete at the Westside High School as well, and the building is in good condition for as far as Westside.
I know there's also been mentioned, at least about the fact that some of the members of the advisory board have shown concerns, but they want to come by and voice their concerns, talk with administrators about them, but they didn't quite follow the proper protocol. And this is kind of when I heard about this at first, I realized, well, I thought everybody knew this, that you're supposed to, if you're going to visit a school, for whatever reason it may be, whether you're a parent to check on a student or to pick up a student, if you've gotten a call and saying, hey, we take Jimmy home or Jane home because of this or that or the other, that you're supposed to check into the office first. And apparently some of the board members may not have gotten the memo on that.
Yeah, I mean, we've been very, very transparent. In fact, I've talked about that several times at the advisory board meetings, and, you know, that's just a standard protocol. But, yeah, you can't just walk into a school building and walk around, and especially can't take pictures and all that type of stuff. And so repeatedly have asked the advisory board members, not all of them, but the couple that were not wanting to follow the procedures, that we certainly will make an appointment, sit down and talk with them, as we've done many, many times. Anytime they want to have a meeting, we've accommodated that. But you can't just walk into a building and walk around and interrupt the building. You just can't do that. So everybody has to check into the front desk and go through the proper protocols, like everybody else that has to do it. All other school districts.
Do you think those issues might have been resolved now after the first concerns came out?
I hope so. You know, we have offered to meet whenever they'd like to meet. I'm happy to sit down and do that. Just need to set up an appointment so that we can make sure that we're accommodating everybody's schedule. Absolutely.
Well, Dr. McNulty, thank you for spending time bringing up some of these points that have come out and clearing up some of the questions that people might have had about them. And we hope to hear back soon, especially as you get more of work that's done at the buildings in the school district and some of the other things that the referendum that Gary voters had agreed to support in past months to get these projects underway and to continue on. Thank you very much for being with us to talk about it today.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you. That's Gary Community Schools Corporation manager, Dr. Paige McNulty. Famous TV painter Bob Ross, the guy that you see on Lakeshore PBS and other public television outlets, on a show that was, by the way, created in a little living room that was turned into a TV studio in Muncie, Indiana, is now the subject of a controversial, at least to some, documentary.
We're going to talk now about some happy little trees, or rather the man who made them famous.
But it's that easy, that easy. What's so fantastic about this is that anybody can put a little masterpiece on canvas with just a little bit of practice, a vision in your mind, and off you go.
That, of course, is Bob Ross on his TV show, The Joy of Painting. He was in it over 31 seasons in the 1980s and 90s. He's got new fans, as people stuck at home during the pandemic have turned to a new Bob Ross channel online for comfort. Actor Melissa McCarthy and her husband and filmmaker Ben Falcone are among his many fans, so much so that they've produced a documentary about his life called Bob Ross: Happy Accidents, Betrayal, and Greed. Falcone says that when they were thinking about launching the project, they looked around online for information about the late Bob Ross and found very little. So when they met with documentary filmmakers Joshua Rofe and Steven Berger, they were full of questions.
By the time we met with them, it was about a week later, and they already had a bunch of answers, which is already impressive. They say, well, we already learned this, and we already learned this, and we've talked to this person, and you're like,
they just launched into this immediate investigative state, and it moved very quickly. Once we agreed to do it, they really were like, we're on our way to Florida. We have somebody coming with us. Like, we have an investigation. It all turned so tactical so quickly that I was like, this is such a different, exciting way of working, but completely different from regular filmmaking.
I think that's really interesting. You expect to go into doing something where you're finding out about the life and times of this, you know, by all accounts, sort of gentle soul. And immediately you're thrust into almost an investigative kind of space. And that's because there has been a lot of litigation around his estate and around the people who are in charge of his estate. When did you realize that this was something different than what you had sort of anticipated when you thought, oh, we think Bob Ross is kind of cool and we like to watch him paint?
You know, Josh and Steven, they were just hitting a lot more roadblocks than they're used to hitting in terms of getting people to speak about someone that they might have known when they were alive. So,
and we were curious because we said, oh, is that, you know, are these stories bad? He goes, no, they're just not willing to talk. Usually if we have 40 people to contact, we're going to get most of those people to talk. He's like, we're getting like one person that is willing to kind of talk. And they were like, we've never seen this kind of hesitancy and just refusal to speak due to litigation.
So yeah, so that was when we sort of figured out, oh boy, this might be a little different than what we thought it was going to be.
Just to set the stage for people, at the time, kind of hobbyist craft, hobbyist painting, it was, as the kids say, a thing, which I didn't realize the scale of it. Just how big did this kind of moment in pop culture history get in terms of people who like to watch painting and people who are like taking classes and the sort of industry that grew?
Well, it was pretty huge. Yeah. I mean, and actually it continues to be so, you know, amidst the confines of a pandemic and, you know, people doing things at home. But, you know, if you look at social media and the, you know,
the merchandise, the products, like we have shirts. I have a toaster way before we started the documentary, but Ben's mom gave us a toaster that literally burns the impression of Bob Ross into our toast because we liked him so much.
And Bob became kind of a rock star of his time, you know, and once you see the movie, you'll see the kind of crowds that he would draw when he would go do a painting seminar. So this guy who just had a sort of a simple beginning, he really reached the top of a field that nobody even really knew was that much of a field, though it got bigger and bigger.
And his range was very unusual. I can't think of someone else that was enjoyed by people across such a wide spectrum that I found that very interesting.
What did you learn about what he was like as a person? People may not be familiar with how he came to be a painter.
You know, I think if you do a quick Google search, what you'll know is that he was in the military. People did speak loud and he decided he was going to speak softly.
Yeah, I think he said when he left the army, that was the last time he wanted to raise his voice.
Right. But it's harder to know exactly what went on in this man's life. But I was happy to find out that he was very level-headed. He seemed like he was kind to everybody, but he also knew exactly what he wanted as an artist and what he wanted his show to be.
Right. That was the premise for people who haven't seen it, that he essentially would paint a painting from beginning to end, seemingly without error, but maybe happy accidents, so to speak, as he called them. Walt and Annette Kowalski were Bob Ross's business partners, and they were instrumental in kind of building up the Ross brand in the beginning, and of course later in terms of licensing. Not to get too into the weeds, but what was the disagreement between them and Ross's family?
Who owns it is the disagreement. You know, I think there was a court case and not to give everything away, but
yeah, it's hard. You don't want to give things away. Bob certainly wanted it to go to most of the business to his son. He left it to his son and his brother. And very quickly that was kind of taken through litigation. And because at the time Steve was so young, Bob thought, you know, let's have an adult still guiding him with where he's going to take this company. But before Steven kind of
He didn't get to take hold
of it. He didn't get to take hold of it at all. And he actually didn't know about any of that until he was well into his adult life.
So right now, who owns the rights to the name Bob Ross?
The Kowalskis.
Bob Ross.
Completely.
What was it like trying to make this film then? I mean, with the understanding that they really, you know, frankly warned you not to kind of infringe on the rights of Bob Ross Incorporated.
Well, frankly, we could all be getting sued right now just for talking about it. Apparently, there's so much litigiousness around that was why so many people didn't want to speak to the filmmakers. Everyone's afraid of getting sued. So it's definitely challenging to even, you know, talk to people about it or, you know, to go through it. And, you know, even as we're having this discussion with you now, you know, we've been kind of warned, keep to the basics, try not to get too into it because we will get sued.
Does it make you rethink that toaster?
Yes,
it does. You know, so we've never intended to set out and create a hit piece. We like Bob Ross and we still do. We were surprised to uncover some of the things we uncovered. And I think the filmmakers, Josh and Steven, did a really nice job of making kind of a complicated, balanced movie out of a character that is complicated. We found out things about him that we didn't expect. Nobody's perfect.
And there is a thing of when you know someone as an artist, no matter what their medium is, it's like, there's a business behind it. And I would venture to guess that business is always much more complicated than the personality that they lead with.
That's actor Melissa McCarthy and her husband and filmmaker Ben Falcone. They produce the documentary Bob Ross, Happy Accidents, Betrayal, and Greed. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us. And yeah, I hope people enjoy it.
Bob Ross, Happy Accidents, Betrayal, and Greed is now available on Netflix.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Well, the General Assembly will come back to work. Yeah, they're still officially in session. They just took an adjournment earlier this year, but they'll come back to work here this fall to start working on new political boundary maps for not only themselves as lawmakers, but also for congressional districts. But there are citizens in Indiana, in particular, a citizens advisory group that has been pushing hard for public input into the matter. In fact, they want to have certain efforts that are drawing public attention to the possibility of partisan gerrymandering that has happened for decades, and to be able to press the real map makers, that is to say the state lawmakers, to be able to tamper any kind of political inclinations they may have. One of the groups we're talking about is the Indiana Citizens Redistricting Commission. And with us, our guests, who is Julia Vaughn. She's executive director of Common Cause Indiana, but she helped form the Citizens Commission, and she's with us as we get ready to talk about what lawmakers are going to be dealing as far as the new maps are concerned. Julia, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Oh, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to get the opportunity to talk to folks in Northwest Indiana.
Well, since we've had our series of public meetings recently, within the last couple months, to bring up the subject, what has happened, or what is certainly in particular the citizens group going to do to try to push lawmakers to look the right way for a change?
Well, you know, we were really pleased at the incredible turnout that lawmakers found when they toured the state earlier this month. At each hearing, there were large crowds, and everybody stayed on message. We want a transparent process that gives us real opportunities to participate, and we're tired of gerrymandering. We want fair maps. Now, the question is, are we going to get it? Because now lawmakers have gone behind closed doors. They've got their census data. We know they're putting their new districts together, but we haven't heard much from them. And our fear is that we will just get a handful of days in late September when they come back to the State House and start officially putting their maps through the legislative process. So, you know, we believe they should release those maps immediately. We know they've been working on them for a couple of weeks, so we're calling for them to be made public immediately after Labor Day. If they say they're going to come back on September 20th and start moving these things through the process in just a couple days, then show us the maps now. Mm-hmm. Citizens need the opportunity to evaluate what lawmakers are proposing and give our feedback. And if we just get a handful of days and no more public hearings around the state, that's going to be very difficult. So show us the maps immediately. and give us enough time to provide feedback, because, you know, these maps will be in play for the next decade. They have an inordinate amount of impact on who gets elected for both Congress and the state legislature. So we don't need this done in the dark. We need this process done out in the open with plenty of time for Hoosiers to really participate.
Now, you've probably had an opportunity to look at some of the basic data that the census has put out finally after all the delays that have happened because of it. The same data that the General Assembly is looking at in trying to get these maps together. What kinds of changes did you see in looking at the data that might have a real impact on how the legislative as well as the congressional district maps are going to be drawn?
Right. That shifting population in our state really does make it difficult for the legislature. And again, it's another reason why this needs to be going on out in the open. We've seen a continuation of the population shifts that we've seen really for the past 20 years here in Indiana. Rural areas in our state continue to lose population. Most of the urban areas in our state are gaining population. We've also learned that Hoosiers are becoming more diverse. We've seen a really large jump in the Latinx population over the past decade. So we hope that legislators will be mindful of the growth in certain minority voters in our state and that they will be well represented by these new maps. I think particularly in Northwest Indiana, we're going to be watching the changing of districts because, you know, we continue to see the northern part of Lake County lose population and it shifts more down towards the southern part of Lake County. So that's going to be really interesting, I think, in terms of not just state legislative districts in Lake County, but the first congressional district. You know, there's a lot of speculation that Republicans will go after that district. It has been for decades a district represented by Democrats. Some people seem to think that there's an opportunity because of the shifting population in Lake County to draw more Republicans into the district and perhaps see a Republican elected from Northwest Indiana. What troubles me is, again, that all of these conversations are going on behind closed doors. I think people in Northwest Indiana have an awful lot at stake here, and they want to be part of this conversation.
I understand that when the Citizens Commission had their hearings here not long ago, one of the speakers at one of the hearings is a retired software developer named Rob Albright Malinger. And he has some very definite ideas and views about how Indiana's political districts seem to have changed enough that it kind of fosters, certainly it, we know it has in the past, but even more so today, that it fosters gerrymandering. And there's no competition among the political parties.
That's what we heard over and over again. You know, the Citizens Redistricting Commission held 10 virtual hearings, and we got that feedback not just from Northwest Indiana, but all over the state. Certainly, and I think it's particularly acute at the congressional level, we have seen competition in elections in our state squashed by partisan gerrymandering 10 years ago. You know, we used to have the 2nd Congressional District and the 9th Congressional District. They were very competitive. Every 2 years, the Republican and Democratic candidates really had to work hard. And that engenders good voter turnout. You know, people want to participate in elections if they believe that their vote really is going to matter and impact who gets elected. But we've seen that really dry up over the past decade. What was different in 2011 as opposed to previous years is that we had one-party control of the redistricting process. So, therefore, we have seen districts that benefited that party that was in control in 2011. Their candidates have had an easier time winning elections than Democrats. And so, you know, we're facing the same scenario this time around as well. One party is totally in control of this process. So that's why we thought it was really important to create a parallel redistricting process so that citizens and lawmakers alike could see that there's a better way to do this, that we should have a multi-partisan group of people in charge. And then we're really excited about our public mapping competition because there are a lot of different ways that we can divide our state up into political districts. There's not just one option that will be coming out of the legislature. So we've opened this up to all Hoosiers and say, hey, try your hand at drawing districts. We've got a competition going, so we've got some significant cash prizes for the best districts that Luke will then use to compare with the legislative maps and hopefully pressure our lawmakers to pass maps that are fair to all voters in our state.
Now, obviously, this little competition is going to have to end sometime ahead of when the lawmakers come back to work. How long is the this little contest, if you want to call it that, will continue?
Well, we don't have a whole lot of time, so I encourage folks to go to District R, that's district, just tack an R on the end, .org. You'll click on there's a map of the United States, you click on Indiana, that'll get you into our portal and get you started. But we don't have a lot of time. As you said, because of the very truncated process that the legislature has given us, we'll only be accepting entries until September 13th, midnight. That's Eastern time on September 13th will be the deadline to get your district maps in. But it's well worth the effort. We've got a $3,000 prize for the best state house maps, $2,000 prize for best state senate maps, and then a $1,000 prize for the best congressional districts. And, you know, we're looking for maps that don't favor one political party over the other, that keep communities of interest together, and that really try to reduce the number of times that counties are divided into different districts.
We're talking with Julia Vaughn, who is the executive director of Common Cause Indiana, and she's also with All In For Democracy, and she's been one of the organizers of the Indiana Citizens Redistricting Commission that has been working hard to get public input and, in turn, public support and, in turn, pressure lawmakers to be able to do up their maps that have to be done because of the changes in the census and do it in an open and more transparent form. I know that a number of statewide Democrats, people like State Representative Cherish Pryor of Indianapolis, who actually made a trip up here to Northwest Indiana during some of the hearings that were held up here, but she's from Indianapolis and a key member of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus. Do all of her members on the caucus have visited other communities or their own communities and their districts and got the word out to get people to pressure lawmakers to do the right thing?
Well, we are certainly seeing a lot more public attention being paid to this issue. You know, I've been around a long time, and this is actually my third round of redistricting. I'm starting to understand it, I think. But I'll tell you, so many more people are aware and participating and demanding the opportunity to participate. So I think that's because of the efforts of folks like Representative Pryor, of groups like my organization and our coalition, All In for Democracy. And, you know, I think it's partly because the Indiana General Assembly has done a lot of real bonehead things over the past decade. And it has caused a lot of people in our state to look at them and say, wait a second, you know, this group doesn't seem very representative of me and my neighbors. What the heck is going on? And what the heck is going on is gerrymandering. You know, we had a process back in 2011, and they're setting up another similar process in 2021 that allowed lawmakers to choose their voters, instead of having districts that allow voters to choose their lawmakers. So we're pulling out everything we can this year to try to get a different kind of process this year, because there's just so much at stake. And I think the public interest in it and the public understanding, you know, makes that pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. Hoosiers have caught on that gerrymandering is bad for voters. It's bad for communities across our state. And they're calling for something different this time around.
Now, I don't want to have you to telegraph what the next moves will be if lawmakers come up with maps that don't look hardly any different than the ones that are in place and the ones that have been enacted for decades. Do you think, though, that, that there's a possibility that some of these issues may end up in a court sometime, that some of the cases may end up contesting whatever the district maps show?
Well, you know, there is so much at stake. That is always a possibility. You know, my organization has litigated this issue in other states like North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Florida, and so that remains an option. It's not a really good option here in Indiana. It's not that our Constitution doesn't guarantee free and fair elections. It certainly does, like constitutions in other states. But I think politically it's a tough row to hoe here in terms of the composition and the court and just some of the traditions that they've held here. You know, we have a pretty strong separation of powers ethos at the Indiana Supreme Court. So I would be really shocked if they intervened in redistricting here. But you never know. And because so much is at stake, I think that's an option that we have to continue to keep on the table. But, you know, it's premature to talk about that right now because we still have this legislative fight ahead of us. And, you know, we're all about organizing at the grassroots. It is incredibly important for people to rise up and say enough is enough. We want fair maps. And so, you know, there was great turnout from Northwest Indiana up at the Valparaiso public hearing a couple of weeks ago. I would encourage people to demand another set of public hearings and demand that the legislature come to Lake County. My goodness, you're the second largest county in the state, one of the most diverse. It is very important that they make it easy for people in Lake County to participate in this discussion. So demand that our legislators give us the maps, give us enough time to evaluate them, and just tell them no more gerrymandering. It's not good for Indiana, not good for our future. They shouldn't be afraid of competitive districts. If you think your ideas are better than the other candidates, then you should welcome competition, not try to hide from it.
Julia Vaughn's executive director of Common Cause Indiana. She's also with the group 4NIN for Democracy, and she is also one of the organizers of the Indiana Citizens Redistricting Commission. And Julia, thank you for joining us again to talk about the issues of coming up with some new legislative and congressional maps, which lawmakers in Indiana will get to do very shortly. Thank you for being with us today to talk about it.
Thank you.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back with you tomorrow.